I am Denise Morris, your host this morning. Next on The Old Mole, Desiree Helgers brings together audio excerpts from the events along the Red Road to D.C., a journey and campaign to call attention to the need to protect Indigenous sacred spaces under the threat from fossil fuel exploitation.
The following audio is taken from the Red Road to D.C.'s video feed, which you can find on Facebook at Our Shared Responsibility, A Totem Pole Journey. We begin with July 13th, Duwamish Territory, Seattle.
To open us up is Ms. Judith LeBlanc. She's the Executive Director with Native Organizers Alliance and leading this extraordinary nationwide initiative.
Good evening, or good afternoon to everyone. And it is such a wonderful moment to be together around this virtual fire. You know, the Red Road to D.C. is a cultural strategy, it's a narrative strategy, and it's an organizing strategy. It's weaving all of those strategies together in order to ensure that we lift up the urgent necessity for immediate action to protect sacred places. There are countless sacred places, but in the places that the Red Road will visit, they are the places that have come so far and yet need so much more to be done in order to be taken care of for our descendants. When we first began to talk about this journey, the Lummi Carvers said, we want to carve a totem pole that can represent the moment, the decision point that we're in, not only as Native peoples, but as a part of humanity, that all have a common stake in the protection of Mother Earth. In many ways, the Red Road to D.C. is trying to build on what has become the work of generations to protect sacred sites like Bear's Ears, like Chaco Canyon, the Black Hills. And so we could not go with the totem pole to every area. We had to visit some places virtually, like the Arctic, Bristol Bay in Alaska, like the area of Mauna Kea, as well as other places. But the most important thing, I think, is that Nevada was included. Why? Because it highlights not only the struggle of tribal and Native peoples and community to protect sacred place, but because it highlights the dramatic collision course that we are on. That if mining and extractive fossil fuel industries are allowed to determine the future of Mother Earth, there will be none. We know that sacred places are being threatened by climate change and chaos, by careless development over time without concern about land or water and its impact the development will have on the future of that land and water, as well as careless, thoughtless government policies. But we're in a situation where the door is finally cracked open, that we do have the possibility of transformational policy change if we leverage the collective organizing that is being done on the ground, not just in the sacred places we're visiting virtually, but also those that we are visiting physically, and those countless sacred places across the country that are endangered. We need a fundamental change in federal policy. And so we're bringing this totem pole to D.C. to remind the Biden administration of their ancestral responsibilities to protect our right to the freedom of religion, our constitutional right. We are taking the totem pole to D.C. in order to say the time for us to be sitting at the decision table is now. How best to solve the problems of land and water and the right and freedom to religion than to have tribal nations sitting at the decision table. The UN offered up the solution of prior informed consent as the best way, the most democratic way for nations to relate to tribal and indigenous communities. And so in this journey, we're bringing the message also to the Biden administration that we're ready, that we're going to lean into the power, the inherent, the moral and the legal power that we hold as tribal nations and indigenous people to protect Mother Earth for all. I think that the issue of lithium mining in Nevada will help you all understand tonight why it is important that we are looking at the horizon, that we're protecting Mother Earth by looking at the horizon. There are short-term solutions that sound like they're going to ease us off of the total dependency on fossil fuel. But sometimes those solutions are false solutions and can create unintended consequences. And that's what the lithium mining in Nevada is all about. And I just want to end by saying there was an article in Forbes magazine last week or the week before about another lithium mining company who has decided, in order to skirt U.S. restrictions that they feel are beginning to build, that they will attempt to drill in the ocean, in the area that is under international control and therefore has no restrictions. And they're not even sure if there's lithium. But they're even thinking about trying to destroy the sacred waters of the oceans. So tonight you will learn much. I want you to know that we wish we could come to Nevada and visit with you all. We are sitting now on Duwamish territory in Seattle. There's a whole crew of people from Indian country that are outside in rented vans and cars waiting for us to get in them to head towards Lummi Nation, where tomorrow morning at 7, we will begin the Red Road to D.C. We will begin in a good way with prayers. Please follow us our daily ultimate Indian road trip across the country for 3 weeks and see on redroadtodc.org videos and live streams of the different ceremonies and gatherings all along the way from Lummi Nation to Washington, D.C. I also want you to know that we received confirmation that Madam Secretary Deb Haaland will be accepting and receiving the totem pole, the delivery of the totem pole on the National Mall on July 29th. So we hope you will tune in, come to D.C. July 29th, or tune into our live stream.
July 15th at a blessing ceremony on the Snake River in Nimi Pu territory.
The chairman of the Nez Perce Tribal Executive Committee, Samuel Penny, and really proud to see him and Shannon, others spearheading this Sama Orca conference and pushing for the dam breaching or dam removal. One thing I guess I'd like to say is people don't, I've never heard it mentioned too much, but those four lower Snake River dams were designed to be breached. Like they have an earthen part, they have a concrete part, so they can remove the earthen part and then allow the water to free flow better. And it's kind of like David was saying about this water here. Like this is all reservoir. Then the reservoir goes way up by a soat and past the soat in a little ways. So it's all slack water, and that's really detrimental to the salmon because the water is warm. Like this water is really warm compared to the clear water where it's free flowing. So like I said, I just appreciate the tribal council pushing this issue and the other tribes up and down the river pushing for it. So it's really nice to see. So here's Sam Penny.
Coach Mary, I'd just like to welcome everyone here this morning. As Julian mentioned, I first recall this issue of dam breaching came up before the Nez Perce Tribal Executive Committee in 1999. So that was the very first time that we start talking about dam breaching. But before I begin, I'd like to thank Julian and the Nimi Pu Protecting the Environment and also the carvers, the Healing of Tears carvers that have carved this magnificent totem pole. And I've been to Lummi very many times, and they have a rich history and culture and tradition there, and they've done this several times before on other either natural disasters or other issues that happened across this country, and have been advocating for protection of sacred sites all across this country. So, we commend them for all that they do. And I'd also like to just talk briefly about what was mentioned about, these slack waters. We just had a discussion the other day about warm water temperatures and the effects it has on all anadromous fish, including, lamprey and steelhead. So right now, for those that don't know, that they're releasing a lot of water from Dorshak Dam because these slack waters are so warm that it's fatal to fish. So, you know, predators and all along the route of the migration of anadromous fish are in danger of extinction. So that's why we're at a critical point right now. And the only way that we can get any action is to, as Julia mentioned, Orca and Salmon Summit last week, you know, to educate Northwest congressional delegations, because right now they're in key positions within the United States Congress to take some action now. And when I read about the significance of this magnificent piece, you know, it's 2,800-mile journey across this country, and then it will be at the Smithsonian National Museum of American Indian, where it will be a reminder to the current administration and to future administrations, as well as to Congress, that, you know, the plight of not only the salmon issue here in the Northwest, but the plight of indigenous people across this country and around the world. I think we've seen recently the issue of residential schools up in Canada, the issue of boarding schools here in this country, you know, missing and murdered indigenous women, missing children. So we just hope that, you know, the journey of this totem will be safe, as it was stated in the prayer, and that it will be a constant reminder to Congress and the general public that the indigenous people were still here, and we survived all the things that have happened to us, and we'll continue to fight for the natural resources that we're all so dependent on. I'd like to, again, thank all of you for being here with us today. Katsiayo.
Lummi House of Tears Carver, Doug James.
Aichkwachil to each and every one of you. Sitki Katum Sonasnat. Really gratefully honored to be standing upon this land today. With the ancestors that walked this land before all of us, to come and mix our tracks with the ancestors and all of you that are present today. The spirits are strong. We come down off the line of Chief Siath, the Duwamish. We come off of our Lummi Nation. My brother Jewel really puts his hands out to each and every one of you. And he's thanking all of you that have had a heart prayer for him. You know, he's preparing to go through a surgery. But he wants to just raise his hands to all of us and of all of you. Just want to say Haishka to our elders that are here, to all the youth that are here. And it's to the youth that the baton is going to be passed down to. You know, we've heard it said, you know, that voices that got to be heard today are your voices. The climate change coming on and everything else, you know, when we're long gone in dust, what are we going to pass the baton down to our next seven generations to? What kind of lifestyle are they going to have? So we're just asking that each and every one of us has an obligation to reach out and let your voice be heard.
Shannon Wheeler, Vice Chairman of the Nimiipuu Nez Perce Tribal Executive Committee.
The salmon are moving down from the acclimation sites or from their natural spawning areas, and they move down. And once they hit the slack water, they start running into problems. Once they hit that first dam, they run into another problem. So with sediment buildup and the channels that are reduced, predators that are in those channels now have a smorgasbord when the juvenile migration begins. And also, without the numbers of lamprey that outnumbered the salmon and steelhead both out of that system, that's reduced to the salmon and steelhead as the sources of food for those predators that are in the water now. So the sediment's an issue. And then you bring in the slack water, which we know, you know, the water is going to warm. And then even with climate change now, it's even warming at a faster rate, and we're experiencing a summer right now like no other. So we know that. Then we also know they hit the dams then. So once they hit the dams, they're either going over the spillway or they're going through the turbines. And so these salmon are going over those concrete barriers and through these turbines, and they're being injured. Their survival rate through those dams, a 50% survival rate on the way to the ocean. And they face all these pools going down with all of these similar problems all the way down. And then they're expected to survive once they get to the big game, the ocean, when they go through all of this gauntlet and they're maimed or they're injured or they're facing gas bubbles going down through there. And then we know the ocean conditions now are just another issue, another obstacle that they currently face. So then again, Congressman Simpson tells us that, well, I've looked at dam breaching 20 years ago. I laughed at it. You're going to take out the dams? No way. Those dams aren't coming out. There's got to be another way for salmon to survive. Well, at the Nez Perce tribe, we've definitely turned all the dials that we can turn in restoration. So Congressman Simpson's proposal proposes that through technology, through renewable energies, through different modes of transportation, that we can change things. We can do business better. And that's exactly what his proposal is meant to do, to start the discussions so that we can look at a better, stronger Northwest.
Also traveling on the Red Road to D.C. with the goal of meeting with Interior Secretary Deb Haaland to advance the cause of federal recognition for the Salila Wyam is Lana Jack, director of the Columbia River Indian Center. I spoke with Lana on July 16.
Indian people who have been under extermination for 500 years. The ongoing genocide against our people has never ended. Today, it is about the acknowledgement of the heinous crimes against us, whether it be the boarding schools or the policies like the Dawes Act or any of those that exterminate us as the original or aboriginal title holders all across this land. People always want to talk about Salila like Salila Falls, like she's gone and dead and buried, and she's not. She's a prisoner of war like myself. And we're getting down to the last hour here. What I intend to go back to Washington, D.C. and do is prove to the Department of Interior that my truths are solid and to solidify that the broken promises made to my chiefs and my mothers, because my mothers negotiated between 1933 and 1948 their stay at Salila Falls. Federal Indian law protects us as well. They took our language. Yes, they cut our braids off. Yes, they beat us. Yes, for speaking our language. And this is a sad legacy, but even sadder for me, I come from a fish village where I can't even fish for sustenance. If I'm hungry, I can't even go out and catch me a fish without catching me a case to go to court somewhere. There's six different villages that are continuously occupied year-round that need housing and water. We need a clinic. We need fulfillment of promises.
This has been Desiree Hilligers with the Omal Variety Hour.